Welcome to this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, with particular focus on the Asia and Oceania zone. My name is Anne and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, the special needs seating sections are exclusively for those who are in some way handicapped over this side. If we start with a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 70 years. First of all, I'll say a few little things about myself. I sidled fearfully into AA in September 1969, and I had great hopes that AA might be able to give me another 6 months of life. And they told me, don't worry about 6 months, just worry about today, take care of today. So I'm taking care of today still, and it's nearly 36 years. And today is a big enough day for me to manage anyway. One of the reasons I was asked to chair this when they heard that I was attending is that in 4 years from 99 to 2003, I was given the great privilege of setting up the first independent secretariat for the whole Asia and Oceania zone. It was one of the greatest and most exciting times of my life. Very difficult at times and so thrilling. Every morning I'd get up and I would turn on my computer wondering who would be there today and the emails. And there'd be people like Bernard in Borneo, the only AA member in Borneo. Or it might be Noriaki from Japan's General Service Office or Bob from Fiji. Never knew who it was going to be. But I have so many friends all over the zone and I've met many of them face to face at the Asia Oceania service meetings. And it is truly a mind-bending experience. The Asia Oceania service meeting first began in 1995. The moves towards it began in 92 between Yuki from Tokyo and Bob from New Zealand. They were talking together at the World Service Meeting. And they were seeing other zones of the world beginning to get together to share experience, strength and hope. And they worked and worked together until finally Bob and two or three other New Zealanders, at their own expense, flew to Tokyo and sat down with the Japanese Fellowship and they had their first meeting. My country of Australia hadn't realised how important this was going to be, so they weren't there. And after that they realised and hung their heads in shame and said, we must get there the next time. So the very next time they put their hands up also to host the third one. And it was at the third one that I was sitting as an observer when they began to think of having an independent secretariat. Since then it's gone on. We have been hosted by Korea and Hong Kong since then. And this coming year, next August, this year, it will be in Australia again. And I've just recently heard which countries are coming. It started off with very few. There were six countries, I believe, in this third one in Australia. This time we're going to have New Zealand, Australia, Hong Kong, China, Japan, Mongolia, Thailand, Cambodia, Indonesia, Philippines and Russia, and possibly Vietnam for the first time. So because the Japanese people were so important in the setting up of this, we've asked Takayuki Hayashi if he will speak for us first and tell us what it's like in Japan.
Good morning, my name is Hayashi, and Takayuki appears on the program, so please call me Takayuki. Takayuki is my first name, and I'm alcoholic from Japan. Thank you. I was in World Service Meeting delegate to Guatemala in 1986, and to New York in 1988. And at the Guatemala meeting, I met the doctor from Australia. She was She was a nice doctor, and at that time there weren't any Asian Oceanian zone meeting. So she recommended me to set up some kind of such a meeting. So just after Guatemala meeting, I went to Seoul, Korea, and I met several AA members. And also, 2 or 3 years after, I went to Australia, and I took part in the Australian National Convention in Fremantle, and I made a short speech, and I said that we shall set up some kind of Asian Oceania meeting, and eventually, in 1995, as she said before, New Zealanders came to Japan, and at that time we held the 20th anniversary of AA in Japan, and prior to the convention, we held the first Asian Oceania meeting there with the General Service Manager from New York, and several members from New Zealand, and other people consisted of Hong Kong people or some other kind of Asian countries. And from that on, we can enjoy cooperating with each other. It's a nice thing, I think. I become thirsty when I... it's happy because it's water, just water. It's not alcohol. I'd like to talk about my drinking days. I started when I was 17 years old in a college, and I was not a good drinker. My drinking was not good, and I didn't show up for classes, and I spent my tuition fees on just on drinking. And I thought at that time, if I would become a businessman would have his own timetable, I would be forced to work from 9 to 5, so it would be a good thing. But I was not a businessman. I didn't show up for work from the beginning. So I tried to get married to ex-wife and I tried to have first child. I tried to have a second child. My efforts to become like a gentleman was fruitless. And when I was 30 years old, I went to mental hospital, and I stopped drinking when I was age 43. So during 13 years, I was in and out of mental hospital 11 times. At that time, there weren't any Alcoholics Anonymous program, and the doctor gave me just pills. The pills were tranquilizers or sometimes sleeping medicines. I continued to drink in the town. And I knew AA in 1976. And AA came into Japan in 1975. So 1 year after AA came into Japan, I knew AA. But I didn't believe in the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't understand the concept of higher power, or God appears in the textbook, and I couldn't totally believe the Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had slips four times, and when I was age 43, I hit bottom. And after the drinking, I was sure I would be dying little by little, day by day. So I started taking AA 12 steps day by day, and continued to attend AA meetings. And today I'd like to talk about my recovery and AA 12 steps, my recovery from alcoholism and AA 12 steps. About step 1 to 3, at the end of step 3, there appears the serenity prayer. And serenity prayer is, I think, very logical, and it's far from religious and spiritual. So I like the little prayer, and my drinking dates are unchangeable. They cannot be changed. So I accept my drinking behaviors and drinking dates, and every day I have a lot to be done without alcohol. Has been living my life, my sober life, on one day at a time basis. So it's a wonderful thing. And I'm now 69 years old, so I've been sober for 26 years. Thank you. Thank you very much. With the big help of AA program, and with the big help of my higher power, and with the big help of your higher power. So I think each member has his or her own higher power. So there are many, many millions of higher powers. I think. And about 4 and 5, just 1 year after I got sober, I started taking 12 steps. I bought a notebook, and I wrote my name and the date of my birth on its cover, and I started taking my inventory. And it took 2 months to finish my inventory, and 1 month after I have another man listen to my talks. So it was a wonderful experience. And without my 4 and 5, my first 4 and 5 inventory, I cannot live now, today. So I'm very, very grateful to the program of 4 and 5. Of course, from 1 to 12, it's very important. About the 6 or 7, I'm up to worry too much. I'm too pessimistic about anything. Just after I got sober in the morning, I was always looking for something to be worried about. Does it make sense? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I continued to attend AA meetings, I took the 4th and 5th AA steps. Now, too much worry are gone. So I can enjoy early in the morning, or beautiful morning, without worry. In that sense, time talks. Of course, attending meetings is very important, I think. Step 8 and 9, I got divorced from ex-wife because of my heavy drinking, and I have grown up children. One is 39 years old now. She's a daughter, and she's a junior high school teacher, and another is a son, and he's 36 years old. And one day, several years ago, I knew that he would go to the United States to learn something. So I gave him a postcard saying, I'd like to give you some money, and I'd like to show how to live in the United States. So at that time, my ex-wife got married to another man. So my son had his new father. So we can look at the postcard on the front and on the back. So the new father saw my postcard, and my daughter and my son and my ex-wife and also her father got angry. And my daughter gave me a postcard saying, you can't behave yourself as a real father. You just gave us your DNAs. Making amends. I think making amends, at that time I thought making amends was very difficult to do. So step 8 and 9 should be done little by little on an easy does it basis, I think. Thank you. And step 11, there appears a very difficult prayer. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one finds, and it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. It's very difficult, and it's I can't do such a thing, so I can't die. So if I die sober, it will be happy. But I cannot die. So, but I have an 85-year-old mother. She's not my real mother. She's my wife, my new life's wife. I got married to present wife, and she's an AA. And so, because my wife, my mother, is sometimes has to go hospital because she's old. In that sense, at that time, prior to my schedule, I always have a lot to be done in my mind. So, next. at that time, prior to my schedules, my own schedules, I'd like to go hospital with my mother. So, in that sense, my the difficult prayer makes sense, I think. I think AA program is the program of putting things in order. At step one, I put my drinking days in order by speaking, and at 4 and 5, I by writing down my drinking days in the note, I put such things in order, and at step 6 and 7, I put my shortcomings in order. At step 8 and 9, I wrote down my harmed people who needs to be amended. So I think AA program is a program of cleaning, and always if I try to put something in order, it's very useful, and AA program does work to me. And so, thank you very much for your listening. And another thing, Japan AA will have its 30th anniversary in Fukuoka, Japan. So please take the brochure, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Takahashi. Excuse me. I was very impressed, as possibly we all were, at the story that Pushan told us last night, particularly of the growth in the fellowship in India. So far they haven't been able to get to the Asia-Oceania service meeting, although they did try very hard in 2001. And so sent us in a report, and they've been in communication quite a lot from their GSO and sending their newsletters. They are such an active fellowship in India. And last night I realised, when I went home to my hotel, that the population of Indian AA is greater than the sum total of the population of AA in the rest of this Asia-Oceania zone, and that includes all of Australia, New Zealand, Japan. It's incredible. And as Bhushan said last night, there are several languages. They have major challenges to carry the message. They did inform me that amongst the languages, and these are mainstream official languages, I mean, Canadians know about too. In India, they have Hindi, Marathi, Tamil, Kannada, sorry if I've got the pronunciation wrong, Punjabi, Bengali, and Malayalam. Pardon? Nepali also. And so the people of the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and so on, we are so lucky that our literature was just handed to us on a platter in our own home language. And the people of Asia, Oceania, are working so hard to get this AA message into their own languages. And this is one way that the Asia-Oceania meeting helps, because we share the ways we do it and making sure that it is translated correctly. But we've got Vasu from India to come and speak to us about what it's like there. And would you like to come up now?
Good morning, friends. I am Vasu, a drunk from Chennai, India. I bring the greetings of all my friends there and in India, and the friends I met during my travel to Toronto. It's an amazing journey. Within the United States, I traveled 7,000 miles to reach Toronto. I'm traveling by surface, traveling by Amtrak from 10th June till 29th June, when I reached Toronto. I went to LA, Tucson, New Mexico, Chicago, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and I'm here now. Hopefully, by your prayers and God's grace, I should be traveling to Vancouver on the 5th, reach there on the 8th, by train. not at this age, but then I have to do whichever age it is. Because this has been my desire for years to travel by surface. Looks like I've taken it up now. And I had marvelous experiences these last few days. One was from Tucson to Chicago, when I was traveling, there was a volunteer of Trails and Rails, the national park wardens. They travel along with the tourists to tell them about. So he was talking about it, and then he asked me as to what is taking me to Toronto. I said, then I had to tell him I'm going for this convention. He was really touched, and he said, I'm so thrilled about AA Fellowship, because he must have heard about the fellowship, and he must be knowing about the fellowship, and he lives in St. Louis. And I was really amazed the way he said, you people, when we come to you, you have your arms open and you welcome us. Whereas we think we are being of help to you, and we say, but our arms are like this. Then he told me, while we were talking, he said, you know, Mr. Vasu, Louis Clark, one of your famous explorers, when he was going down the trail in North America, he met an Indian chief, a good friend of his, and was sharing with him. And he said, Jack, would you like to have a drink? Jack looked at Louis. Louis, you won't want to give a good friend of yours a drink which will make him an ass and sick? I thought that was amazing, which I never thought of earlier. If somebody offers a drink to someone else, this could be the rejoinder, he gets it back. Normally people say, no, I don't drink, you know, I'm not well. That man was point blank, he said, you wouldn't want to give a drink to a good friend, something which you want to give to a good friend, which will make him sick and make him foolish. I thought that was wonderful. These things about me being big to speak at this session, and last evening I carried the country's flag, these things came along when I was traveling. I've been traveling since January. So I have not made any research or study about AA in Asia and AA in but I've got a good friend in New York, an Indian AA dynamo, Roy. He gives me the feed by the net, and I got some message. I'm so grateful that Canada had a very vital role to play in the growth or the AA happening in India. It was way back in 1957, a diplomat from Canada, Charlie Marshall, he was posted in India, and as any committed AA member, and who depends on AA for his survival, he made the inquiries here locally. He said, I'm going to India, I'm being posted there, kindly let me have some AA contacts in India so that I can carry on AA work in India for my own survival. And he was given a couple of contacts by GSO. He came to India, he met those two persons, and simultaneously, he landed on the 12th January 1957, according to the recorded history. And he made incident ad in the papers saying that anyone having a drinking problem could contact me. I would like to share my experience and show you a way out the way I came out. Harry M., a school teacher from Bombay, responded to the ad, met him at Delhi, came to know about the disease of alcoholism and the nuances of the recovery program and the spiritual program. He sat with them and learned all these things and came back to Bombay equipped with the electrician. And as any person who's really committed to his survival, his well-being, would respond positively to AA nuances, and he started a group, a small little group there, a sibling, and he had wonderful sponsees, as we call them now, people who wanted to come in, and they took up the spreading of the message, as we say, to reach out and help people in Bombay. Now, normally what happens is, at least it's my experience, we only operate in that geographical setup. At least I did not have the thought of reaching out to entire Tamil Nadu state because I'm concerned about how to get the group going at that particular place. If I had a macro concept, then I think I would have made a mess of everything. And that's what they did, and slowly AA grew. But it grew only in Bombay. And people were getting in touch with Bombay, outside Bombay, they were getting in touch with Bombay, members in Bombay, and they were staying sober or keeping themselves sober. At the same time, there was an army lieutenant colonel, Trevor King. He also got in touch with Shari in 1957. And he could not start a group on his own because he was being posted to different areas. His vocation, his army postings were taking him to different places. Fortunately, it was taking him to different places. So he sowed the seeds of AA in Calcutta, Pune, Hyderabad, and places like that. As a matter of fact, there is a sponsor of Trevor who is here at the moment. And he did on his own. He spread the message on his own, in his own style, a marvelous person. I had the good fortune of meeting that man. He's such a wonderful man. It's just amazing. And he was a loner, as for the records are concerned. He was in Whitefield, Bangalore. He retired and he settled down there. But he used to take meetings at other places where he was while traveling. And we had the good fortune in Chennai, that used to be called Madras years ago, to celebrate his silver jubilee, 25 years of sobriety, in 1982, October. I mean, all these happenings, at the moment we thought we were dynamic and we were getting those people to do it. Now sitting back, coming out the center of the scene and looking at it, it's all God's happening. I mean, there was no way of me knowing Trevor, there was no way of anybody knowing Trevor, though he is in the big book, the third edition. He wrote a story, his own sharing. But still, you see, what happens is, at least this is my experience, when we are actively involved, at least I think we are actively involved, in doing whatever he shows that we have to do, because I have to keep myself busy. We are in the center of the thick of the happening, so we lose focus. We lose sight of many things that are happening on the surface, on the periphery. It's only when you withdraw and you come out of it and let others take over, then you know what lovely things are happening all over the place. And Trevor was responsible, in a way, by default or whatever, for the Hyderabad group to become the hub of AA in Andhra. And as such, you know, this way, the AA way is spread the entire fabric of Indian subcontinent. It's amazing, when you're there in the thick of it, you're not aware of what's happening. When you look at it from the little away from that, I never realized that AA has spread so much in Tamil Nadu, my state. I never realized that three intergroups are there. When I was actually involved in that AA work in Tamil Nadu, other character friends. I was so concerned about Chennai or little away from Chennai. Now looking back, I can see it's marvelous to see AA spread all over Tamil Nadu in villages where literacy level is low, but the word of mouth going and people getting the message and people responding to it. It's fantastic. It's just unimaginable. Though, when you look at the whole picture of AA in India, you think that it could reach at many other places. I mean, subcontinent area-wise may be very small, but the human population is more than 1 billion. And how many alcoholics are there? How many places we have to go to? But thank God for small mercies, it has made inroads into many, many places in India, and with the promise of reaching out further. I would like to share about the group in Andhra Pradesh, in a small village, which nobody would have thought he would find moorings in a village like that. It's just unimaginable. All you have to do is, you have to go there and see and feel. The warmth, the hospitality, the love, the AA commitment that village has in Andhra, which is not visible in the metropolitan centers of Andhra. It will be for various reasons. It's a close-knit community. And the AA commitment, those youngsters who are not literate, who have inculcated and who are exuding in their AA work, they go by cycles to villages to carry the message. It started in a small village in Andhra. It has spread to satellite towns around. And they have a fellowship of nearly 1,000 to 1,500 AA members in 5 to 6 villages. And if at all any of you travel to India, I'll be happy if you can visit this place. And the anniversary of this group is in Feb of every year. It's a marvelous experience. It may be, very basic comforts you will have. But that is nothing compared to the love that you get. You get tea and coffee round the clock. You got a nice room to stay. The growth, the way this group started, I was really startled. An alcoholic, come from a good family, somewhere in the heart of Andhra, Vijayawada. He got the AA message by default. He didn't want it, but anyway he got it. And the goodness in every one of us, it gets sparked up, and immediately he got up and he said, "Yeah, I hurt my father, I hurt my family, I have to make amends." So that he wanted to go back to a village and sit, do farming, and think and go back. Where does he go? He goes to this Escota, this village, and buys 3 acres of land, and he does this cultivating there, tilling the soil. Every evening he was going to that town, Escota town, on a scooter. 10 minutes, huh? And he was going every evening, he was going there and meeting those people and not talking much about AA, and they got interested in this man coming there and like a clockwork every evening, and they got interested, and that's how the AA message came to these people. Now, this is one of the facets. As Srila Pushan said, India is a crucible of culture, religion, and languages. and we have nearly about 20 odd languages, we, and we have only one, let's say, English. And at the moment we have 10, a big book has been translated to 10 languages. I found that internationally, globally, big book is translated into 52 languages. So India accounts for 20%. Humble pride, I mean. But we need that. We need that. I just go 50 miles away from Tamil Nadu north, it's a different language. If I go 100 miles west, a different language. So we need this language, and we need this translation to be in various languages. And as a matter of fact, many of you must be knowing, all my brothers from India, or all over the world, in particular in Canada, there must be lots of Indians. As I was coming here, one of my friends was asking me to bring Tamil literature to Toronto to carry the message. So this is the wonderful thing that's happening in India, and India A will be 50 from 2006 to 2007. And I want to tell you about Chennai, my hometown, where the message came. Again, a Canadian was responsible. Ken, who gave the message to Raj, who gave me the message. And Chennai AA is 25 this year. I can go on talking about various things that are happening here in India on the AA front. And thank God this is happening in the AA front. They are helping me to grow spiritually, emotionally, in the AA way, to know what I am and what is needed from me, and to be an integral fabric of the AA Fellowship and the international family of AA. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Vasu. Last night I was thrilled to see an old friend carrying the Mongolian flag, Ganbat, and I met Ganbat at the Asia-Oceania meeting in Hong Kong for the first time. It was one of the most amazing stories of how AA got going in Mongolia. We originally got an email come out from them about 3 years ago saying, "Anyone out there? We're here." In so many words. They got their AA begun with the help of some doctors and some Russians in 1998. The first group was formed. When they arrived at the Asia-Oceania Service Meeting in 2003, they reported a membership of 1,500, 30 groups, 10 central offices, a general service office and a general service board. They did discover that some of the things that they were doing were not quite the way that AA does it. And this is one of the great advantages of the Asia-Oceania Service Meeting, which is a meeting of sharing experience, strength and hope. And there many of the countries are coming to find out how they should deal with the early growth pains that originally were faced by the US Fellowship with Bill and Dr. Bob, and we can read about that and share that experience with them. And that they're facing similar experiences. They didn't realise that AA doesn't apply to the government for funds to carry the message. But as soon as they heard that AA doesn't, they immediately stopped, and it was just so inspirational. There are many other stories like that. In 2001, at the Asia-Oceania meeting in Korea, we had a member come to us from Cambodia. At that time, there were only 7 members in Cambodia. And he did ask for a bit of financial help, which we do for the very small fellowships. And he came along, paid for his own travel, but we paid for his accommodation, or the other way around. And he was spellbound with what he learned by the sharing of the other countries, both big and small. And he went back to Cambodia and he started stirring. And he went to Thailand and he stirred there too. And gradually we've been noticing the impact that's happened on both countries, and also it's spreading into Vietnam now too. So it's quite amazing the platform that the Asia-Oceania Service Meeting provides for this shared experience, where people become inspired, and it's happening in Indonesia now too. So today we've got Bill, who's come from Thailand, and he's been involved, I believe, with this member that came to Korea, Wayne, and is involved in the setting up the first structures in the Thailand Fellowship. He may be able to share some of that with us. Thank you, Bill.
Hi, my name is Bill and I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God and because of this fellowship, this wonderful fellowship that we're all part of, I haven't needed to take a drink since December 7th, 1981. And for that I'm truly grateful, and grateful to all of you for being here today. A friend of mine is sitting here in the first row, and she was in the fellowship in Munich where I came into the program. So the international program is very important to me. I'm also very grateful for this opportunity to speak to you, for the invitation to be here. I'm very grateful and humbled by the fact that I got to carry the flag for Thailand last night. And it was a thrilling experience, I have to tell you. Please let me tell you a little bit about our experience in Thailand and what's happening there now. Alcoholics Anonymous in Thailand dates back to the 50s, according to the records that they have at the GSO and the archives. But as far as our current knowledge in Thailand, we set the beginning of a real group in the early 1970s, where two members were joined by a third, and the Bangkok group was formed. Another group in Chiang Mai was formed in 1979, and over time a number of groups have been set up. I think the next group after that was in Pattaya, and a group in Phuket, and on. And now we have quite a few groups in Thailand, but it wasn't until a little over 2 years ago that we began to form some sort of in-country service structure and communicate with each other. Prior to that time, these groups existed on their own, sharing their experience, strength, and hopes with transients coming through. Thailand's a very popular place for tourists to come, and those of us that live there all the time or have business there and spend quite a bit of time have been holding together these groups. What happened, so prior to that time, there wasn't much need for a national service structure in Thailand. And let me give you a little bit idea of the size of our fellowship in Thailand. We figure we may have something like 250 to 300 people in all of Thailand that are involved in our AA groups. About 100 of those are in Bangkok. And very many of us are there on business and spend part of the time in Thailand and other times traveling around Asia or coming back to North America. And so the makeup of our groups is very transient. Anyway, to get back to what happened in 2002, we had a man come out from GSO, and let me remember to say that the help from New York and GSO and AA World Services is immeasurable. You have no idea what it means to us overseas to have that kind of support. And the work they do is phenomenal. When you see there's so few people, you know, in New York and on the service boards and all the wonderful work they're doing, it's just amazing. In 2002, early part of 2002, the Bangkok group, with a little nudging from the General Service Office in New York, because they had been sending funds to GSO, and they said, good grief, why are you sending funds here? You need to be spending this money in Thailand. So they put an ad in the Bangkok Post, which is a national newspaper, with a helpline number, and also set up a telephone answering service. And it was, they felt a little bit too much for this group to handle on its own. And in Thailand, for the last 10 years, we've been having a roundup. And actually, that one meeting a year in February was the time when we all got to see each other. Otherwise, there was very little communication between the groups. And I was present at the one in 2002, and the Bangkok group said, you know, if you want to help us out here with this, we don't want to handle this on our own. And we said, yeah, it's time. We need to have some sort of structure. And so we got together at this meeting in kind of an ad hoc way. Well, who wants to be chair and who wants to be vice chair? We just formed a group. And since that time, we've been meeting quarterly. And it's been a wonderful thing. I have a friend here, John, from Phuket, who I met through the intergroup. And we've been, I think, doing good work. It's been slow because our community is quite small. The AA World Services approved the Thai Big Book in 1993, and it was issued way back then. But despite hard work over the years by the AA Fellowship, we have failed really to make great inroads into the local community. At the present time in the Bangkok area, we have maybe seven Thai nationals. And a miracle happened last year. We had a member, his name is Johnny, he's from Scotland. And he got sober in Bangkok. He's married to a Thai woman. And his wife decided to start a business in Khon Kaen, which is about 100 miles, I guess, outside of Bangkok, 150 miles. And he moved up there, and relatively new in the program, and he was determined to stay sober. And he went around to some hospitals, knocked on the door, and at one of he went to a treatment center and met a nurse there who spoke English. And she got very excited, and they set up an AA meeting in Khon Kaen. And at our last meeting in February in Pattaya, I invite you all to come to this roundup. It's super, yeah. And you'll love Thailand. Anyway, he got these people together. They had been meeting for, maybe 3 or 4 months. And so we had about 15 people from the Khon Kaen Fellowship come down, all Thai speakers, so we had translators there. But it was just such a moving experience to finally have some kind of a breakthrough into the Thai community. Anyway, after we formed the intergroup, we got active and we set up some committees. One of them is PI committee, and we also have a CPC committee. And the PI committee is chaired by a gentleman named Curtis, who, by the way, will be attending as a representative from Thailand for the first time, the Asia-Oceania meeting that Anne's been talking about. And we're really thrilled and grateful that that's going to happen. And I have to tell you also, it's happening because of sounds strange to me because I never heard of it before, but a country sponsorship program. We're being sponsored by New Zealand because, you know, it costs a lot of money to send folks. It costs a lot of money to send folks, and our fellowship just didn't have the funds for doing it. And New Zealand was reaching out, and they'll sponsor us this year. Anyway, At the 8th annual Thailand Roundup in 2003, the intergroup was formed, and I was fortunate to be part of that formation. My personal experience about that is, you know, for me to grow in this program, I've learned that the only way to do it is through service. It just makes all the difference in the world to be involved in spreading the word of AA. And I'm so grateful that I've had the opportunity to do that. We publish a quarterly newsletter. We set it up to be printed after our quarterly meeting so that we could report to the fellowship in Thailand the minutes of the meeting, what we've been doing. And it's called The Easy Does It, and it comes out once a quarter. And also, we have a wonderful website. I don't know if any of you have looked at it. But besides listing the information about meetings in Thailand, we also print a meeting schedule for all the rest of Asia, because we have so many people coming through Thailand all the time and coming to our meetings. It's a wonderful service to have this handout when they say they're going to Nepal or Cambodia and to let them know where they can find the meeting. In addition to that, we published a meeting schedule for all the meetings that happen in Thailand, and that also comes out quarterly. And on our website, we have detailed maps on how to get to our meetings. And all of this work has been done by a small core group of people. And it puts an awful lot of pressure on it. We wish that, you know, we had more volunteers, but in God's time, I'm sure that will come. Last year in Thailand, they have, in Bangkok, they have an information they had set up at the Bumrungrad Hospital. And all the services in Bangkok, and it's primarily focused to the expat community, come in September to this Bangkok fair. And last year, for the first time, AA had a table there to let everybody know, you know, that we exist. And while it doesn't do an awful lot to reach out to the Thai community because they don't normally attend things like that, it's just another way of reaching out. Our hard work is coming in getting in touch with the medical community in Thailand. There's a lot of denial about alcoholism in Thailand. We not only have that difficulty, we also have a cultural difficulty. And I'll read a little bit about that so you can get an idea of what we're faced with. As you know, Thailand is a Buddhist country. 95% of the people there are Buddhists. And for some reason, the God concept doesn't sit well with them. Of course, it didn't sit well with most of us, you know. But there's big resistance there about that. Last year, the CPC committee did get in touch and set up a meeting with Dr. Ronachai at one of the hospitals there. And we thought we really had something going because he's the president of the Psychiatric Association in Thailand. He was also vice chairperson of this large state-sponsored hospital, but not an awful lot came of it. But that doesn't mean we will stop there. We'll just go back and visit him again. Right. The biggest challenge is carrying the message to the Thais, and the biggest challenge is the cultural differences. And for the past 4 years at the Thailand Roundup, Wayne W., that Anne spoke about from Cambodia, has held a Bridging the Gap workshop on carrying the message to indigenous populations. And basically that workshop dwells on the problems and the possible solutions. the past year, as I mentioned before, for the first time, a workshop was attended by about a dozen Thais, mostly from Khon Kaen, and the proceedings were held in Thai and English. The Thais mentioned to us, they said their biggest hurdle is understanding the personal stories in the Thai Big Book. And I think the way we're going to solve that is to ask them to write their own personal stories, and we'll just put it as an addendum to the translated Big Book, so that they'll be able to relate to it. Because in the translated Big Book that we have in Thai, the only stories in there are Dr. Bob's and Bill's stories, so it would be an easy thing to add. Another problem, of course, is the language difference. And our difficulty is we have so few bilingual people that are in the fellowship, and these people are hard pressed. You know, if I set up an appointment with a local doctor, I'm not always sure that English is his second language. I have to go to one of these folks and say, you know, do you have time to go with me to meet this person? When you only have 5 or 7 of these people, it becomes very hard on them. So we have to be very careful not to overwork them. The God thing that I mentioned to you was brought out to be a big problem. Since the majority of Thais are Buddhists, and the higher power referred to in the Thai translation of the Big Book is the Christian God. But what alcoholics, as I said, you know, which of us doesn't have a higher problem with the higher power? But I'm very grateful to the higher power of my understanding, which is one of the millions that Hiyoshi spoke about. Yeah. Down the road, the problems. There is a problem also in Thailand. It's a very structured community. As you know, it's a monarchy. And so it's a very class-oriented society. And with lower class people deferring to those they perceive to either be older, wealthier, or more educated, and they're very frightened to speak freely in that kind of context. So a doctor or a lawyer and a taxi driver or a day laborer would be uncomfortable mixing in the same room, really uncomfortable. And, you know, that may take a while to get over. My own experience about those things is I don't think it makes that much difference, because who of us hasn't had a problem with willingness? And when we need to find this program and are forced to our knees, the willingness comes. And whatever the problems are, whether it's we don't like the way the Big Book is written, or we don't like the people at the meeting, you know, you get over it because you want to stay sober. So I think because of that, it'll all come together in God's time. And so I just want you to know that we're working hard now. We're translating the 12 and 12 into Thai. Thais like to read comic books, and I was surprised to find out that this comic strip came out in 1985. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's What Happened to Joe? You know, and so we're translating that into Thai, and because they like comic books. So that's what we're doing in Thailand, and I'd like to tell you I'm just very grateful to be here and to be able to talk to you, and please come and visit us in Thailand.
Thank you, Bill. It gives us another aspect to look at of the difficulties that there are in carrying this message. Bill mentioned sponsorship. When we had a good look at our whole zone, we could see that there were what you might call rich countries, such as Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and then there were the small and very poor countries, such as Cambodia and Mongolia. And we had quite a discussion at the third AOSM about how we can help one country helping another. And we looked at it in the context of an ordinary AA meeting where the older members sponsor the newer members and help them to stand on their feet in one way or another. We thought about the problem of self-support, but if they can't support themselves and they can't get there, well, what's going to happen? So different ways were set up. I know Japan set up a special fund and a once-a-year collection, and Australia has thought of that idea too. The collection in Australia, which I know most about, called the International Sponsorship Fund, is collected around all the groups in a brown paper bag, because that reminds us of the bottles in the brown paper bags, what it was like. Each year on in the week of Founders Day, and that money collected all over Australia goes into the special fund, and 25% of it is sent to New York to help with translating big books and basic 12-step literature. The other 75% of the fund is used within the zone to assist. And one thing that we did in this last year that I was very proud of was helping with Indonesia, who also has the problem of carrying the message from the expat community into the indigenous community. And of course in Indonesia they also have the problems of distance, with about 1,000 islands scattered right across the equator there. And so Australia funded a special conference to help the indigenous or Indonesian members to come together and start to talk. In Bali it was held, to talk about how they can work in with the expats. But this was the first time that they'd really communicated with each other, but they couldn't do it without that extra financial help to get together. And as Thailand was mentioning, this year New Zealand is helping the Thai people to get to the meeting. We have vast distances to travel to get to this meeting. Australia is helping with the Indonesian delegate and the Cambodian delegate. The Japanese are helping to get the Mongolians there. The Hong Kong Fellowship is helping to get the Chinese there. And at the last Asia-Oceania meeting, which was held in Hong Kong, right at the tail end of the SARS crisis, it was very brave of us all to go to Hong Kong just as the SARS was petering out. We really depended on our higher power to keep us all safe. But we heard that the Chinese were trying to get there. We'd been in communication with some of the expats in Beijing and Shanghai, and they said we could get there and we could speak English, but we want the Chinese fellowship to be there. And so one Chinese member came from Beijing and one from Tianjin, and we called them the Dr. Bob and Bill of China. We didn't know how they could get there. We provided them with a letter that they could give to the government of China to get travel papers. They decided to come by land across country as tourists and cross into Hong Kong that way. There were all sorts of restrictions. They had no money. The expats in Beijing helped. Neither of them spoke any English, and the meeting was conducted in English. But they set off, and one expat travelled with them across country by car. And on the way, they heard of an alcoholic who was in trouble, and they deviated for about 4 or 5 hours travel to go and carry the message. And on the day that we were arriving in Hong Kong and registering for the meeting, they walked in and we all cried because they got there. And with them came two other expats from Beijing who had paid their own money for their own fares and their own accommodation. And I would sit at the chairman's table, or at the head of the conference table next to the chairman, and I watched the two Chinese sitting there with their American translators, big-eyed and so excited to be hearing the way AA works, and that what they'd come to find out, how to carry the message and how to reach it into the different communities. And I believe that they're both here this weekend. I've met the two translators, and if you watch out for them, Beijing Billy and Beijing Brad, they're around. But it is the most wonderful experience. It's like watching from a distance what happened in Akron in 1935. And so this is what carrying the message is about. The sponsorship comes from, we realise that in our zone there are probably 300 million suffering alcoholics. Perhaps there's 300 billion people in the population of Asia Oceania, and if there's 10% of those are alcoholic, that's the numbers that we have to reach. It's the greatest numbers of alcoholics in the world, and the smallest fellowships reaching out to get to them. But together we can make it. At first in Australia there was some mutterings going on that maybe because we have our own struggles, of course, maybe we should look after our own backyard first. And then we started to realise the theme of this convention, this weekend, I am responsible. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And we're all responsible. And so this is what we're all trying to do in the Asia-Oceania zone. Well, we're just about out of time. It's been wonderful sharing with you all. I have a lot more information here if people want to come by. I brought some of our folders of reports that tell about more details of the different countries. So if you want to grab me sometime, I'll be able to share some more, or some of our speakers and other members from our zone. So we're going to thank the speakers very much. All great ambassadors and carriers of the message, as we all are, please feel free to talk with them after the meeting. And we'll close with the Serenity Prayer, and if you'd like to say it in your own language, or whichever language you choose. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.